Welcome to the Deals Talking M&A podcast, sponsored by Baker McKenzie. I'm your host, Sarani Fernando. In today's episode, we'll be focusing on the evolving cryptocurrency market and how companies and dealmakers are navigating a volatile market and a shifting regulatory landscape when it comes to seeking and signing deals. Today, we're joined by a dealmaker and a corporate representative to get two unique perspectives on dealmaking within the industry. First up, we have Lawrence Lee, a partner at Baker McKenzie based in Palo Alto. Lawrence advises clients on M&A and other corporate transactions with a particular focus on tech and fintech. Also joining us on the podcast is Victoria Wong, Associate General Counsel Corporate at Coinbase. Coinbase is a publicly traded company that operates a cryptocurrency exchange platform and is the largest crypto exchange in the US by trading volume. Victoria's views are her own and are not statements made on behalf of Coinbase. Welcome to the both of you.
Hi, Sarani. Thanks. Happy to be here.
Same here. Thanks very much, Sarani. Thrilled to be here.
So just to set the scene, the cryptocurrency industry is rapidly evolving, and we're often seeing deal announcements involving a plethora of different players in the space. Victoria, are you able to break down some of the different and key players in the emerging sector, particularly those that are driving the most M&A interest?
Definitely. So I think maybe something that would be helpful is just to break down some of the terms that many of us hear when we think about the blockchain technology and cryptocurrency. I think it would be helpful to provide an overview very quickly about the technology that underpins the crypto landscape before diving into the players that comprise the crypto landscape. So first and foremost, I think everyone is familiar with blockchain technology. They've heard the phrase, it's a cryptographically secure digital ledger that maintains a record of all transactions that occur on the network, and it follows a consensus protocol for confirming new blocks to be added to the blockchain. Key features of the blockchain include that it's decentralized, it is trustless and permissionless, which means that you can verify transactions on the blockchain going back to the beginning of time. And built on top of the blockchain are smart contracts, which are digital contracts stored on a blockchain that are automatically executed when certain terms and conditions are met. At a high level, crypto assets are digital assets that are built on blockchain technology, and these include cryptocurrencies that many of us have heard about, such as Bitcoin, Ethereum, and other alternative coins, as well as stable coins and security tokens. In terms of players, we have cryptocurrency exchanges and brokers. They operate very similarly to traditional finance or TradFi stock exchange or brokers. So basically exchanges where you can purchase digital assets and cryptocurrencies for investment purposes, or brokerages that help facilitate those types of transactions for institutional or retail customers. In addition to the players that help facilitate crypto transactions, we've also got developers who are the backbone of the blockchain and cryptocurrency infrastructure. They maintain and design blockchain applications and systems, develop core blockchain architecture, and there are also software developers that build applications on blockchain platforms. So back to the question of what is driving the most M&A interest, I think in terms of serial acquirers, we have very well-established players in the space, Coinbase being one of them. I think a great example of a US publicly traded company with international operations. And in a bear market like what we're experiencing currently, it's a perfect opportunity for serial acquirers to look for the next best product, to improve infrastructure capabilities, and to build out a talent base at a time of volatility.
Great. Thanks for that. And Lawrence, as the dealmaker, how have you seen the M&A landscape evolve in this sector? And what's been driving M&A interest and valuations from your perspective?
Yeah, I think the cryptocurrency sector has experienced over the last few years very similar events as other areas of tech and fintech, particularly very fast growth, particularly in the 2020 and 2021 range, driven a lot by the COVID pandemic. We saw M&A activity reach an all-time high in the crypto space in 2022. And similarly, in other areas of the market, we've seen a significant decline in 2023 with respect to M&A activity. I think the general perception of the space is that there's been a lot of growth. And now, as Victoria had mentioned, that we are in a slight bit of a bear market, we now have the opportunity and serial acquirers now have the opportunity to really invest in furthering their growth and to do so in a more quiet market where asset valuations are not as high as they had historically been in the last couple of years.
And just because this is sort of a new emerging sector, what makes crypto deals unique and what sets them apart from, say, traditional tech deals?
One big difference between, I think, deals in the crypto sector as opposed to traditional tech deals is the regulatory overhang that sits behind all of these transactions that we have to think about. These companies are in very highly regulated spaces, and sometimes they are operating in areas where there is a regulatory gray zone, where perhaps the regulator's posture towards cryptocurrency is not yet clear. And I think that is a key factor for serial acquirers to consider when they're thinking about acquiring assets in a different product line or in a different geographic space, to really understand the regulatory impact that could have on their core business and also on the transaction.
And Victoria, do you have anything to add on that point?
I certainly agree with that. I think maybe it's also important to note that there are similarities with traditional acquisitions in terms of dynamics. There's a give and take, a negotiation dance that happens in every buy-sell transaction. And fundamentally, mergers and acquisitions are about allocation of risk. But I do think one fundamental difference with crypto acquirers is that there does tend to be a higher tolerance for taking on risk. And part of that is the desire to proliferate crypto. And in that way, crypto acquirers tend to actually be better situated to be more seller and founder friendly, at least in my experience, and to be tolerant of more risk, just given the higher risk profile of the industry overall, due in large part to some of the regulatory uncertainty that Lawrence has flagged. I also think that the us versus them mentality that you sometimes see in traditional tech deals is more absent or muted in crypto deals because of the mindset of disrupting traditional finance, or when you're working with a mission-driven acquirer that's looking to expand its portfolio and talent base.
Okay, so up to now, I guess maybe from an external perspective, the crypto industry seems to be a little polarizing amongst various different stakeholders, from regulators to investors to strategics and consumers. As both of you are at the forefront of the industry, what would you say are some of the major factors driving some of the hesitance, skepticism, or challenges for the industry in today's market?
So first and foremost, I think there's still a lot of misunderstanding and lack of understanding as to what crypto is and what it could be. So there tends to be distrust of blockchain technologies. There are historical examples of malfeasance. Folks are familiar with, you know, the early 2010s in terms of things like Silk Road and this perception that crypto facilitates nefarious activity. I think that has improved quite a lot over the last 5 years, call it, especially following the pandemic boom. But some of the remnants of that skepticism and hesitation still certainly exist today and become confirmed in terms of public perception of crypto when we see events like the FTX collapse, multiple bank failures happening in the spring of 2023, such as Silvergate, Silicon Valley Bank, and Signature Bank, all of whom had significant crypto business. So in some ways, I think that reaffirms maybe biases that folks have against crypto. But I do think that some of those attitudes are changing as there's more widespread adoption of crypto. I believe in the summer of 2023, at least one in five Americans holds some form of digital assets or cryptocurrency. So we'll continue to see that grow, and hopefully the perceptions will change.
I think another key challenge is a bit of the inconsistency with which regulators are approaching crypto around the world. And you tend to see regulators either taking a relatively aggressive stance against crypto, or on the other hand, being pretty wide open. This inconsistency, I think, really creates a lot of uncertainty in the market. And I think that is a key challenge that the industry has been struggling with for a number of years now and looks to continue to struggle with until we have some consensus in some of the world's largest jurisdictions around how crypto assets should be regulated.
So is that regulatory uncertainty either directly or indirectly impacting M&A negotiations?
The regulatory challenges are having a very clear and direct impact on M&A deals. As Victoria mentioned early on, M&A is about allocating risk. And when we're dealing with challenging regulatory landscapes and uncertainty in the regulatory landscape, that process of allocating that risk is a big challenge when it comes to M&A deals. You could be looking at a jurisdiction to enter a new jurisdiction or enter a new product space. And after you make the acquisition, the regulatory scrutiny on that space changes dramatically. And that's something that is very difficult to predict.
And I guess, Lawrence, you're speaking from the perspective of an M&A lawyer working with different clients. Victoria, do you have a perspective on that being a company insider?
Sure. Certainly, I agree with everything Lawrence has laid out. I think crypto acquirers now more than ever are really focusing on regulatory strategy and certainty. So that includes really comprehensive timelines, very careful trainings for dealmakers within the company. So things like understanding how a regulator might view a deal analysis or evaluation analysis or certain language or things that you might say that could raise eyebrows. So there is a lot more sensitivity to potentially having regulatory scrutiny on competition documents, for example, that historically has not always been so heightened. So I definitely say there's a focus from an operational perspective on ensuring that a deal approval timeline goes smoothly and that there are no surprises to the business stakeholders. And that includes potential inquiries from regulatory authorities.
I like to advise clients to do a lot more legwork upfront prior to potentially even engaging with the other side on an LOI to really understand the client's own comprehensive regulatory strategy and to really think about how this potential target fits within that regulatory strategy and how it could potentially affect that strategy, not just in the jurisdiction that you're looking to make the acquisition, but in your home jurisdiction or in any other strategic jurisdictions that you have a key business. I think a lot more of the legwork upfront will help alleviate surprises down the line. We are also advising our clients to do a lot more deeper due diligence at the early stages of the transaction, not just from a financial and valuation perspective, but also from an integration perspective and looking at that through the lens of the heightened risk with respect to regulatory issues.
And just to follow up on that, Lawrence, how is your team at Baker McKenzie actually approaching deal discussions and term sheet negotiations to perhaps balance some of that risk?
So the way that I think about risk in the industry is unique, heightened crypto-specific risk, and then just risk because of the current economic climate that we're existing in. And for the first one, obviously, we've touched a lot upon doing more due diligence upfront and thinking through the why of your acquisition upfront. As you move into the actual deal negotiations, being very specific in how you're asking questions to the other side and really digging in on things like how they've been running their business from a regulatory perspective, what are their anti-money laundering policies, how have they thought about consumer protection and cybersecurity and data protection, and really digging in on all of those things in a heightened level of detail is extremely important. Similarly, given the general economic conditions that we're existing under, oftentimes we're looking at target companies that may be either distressed or near distressed. And so really understanding their liabilities, where things stand from an integration perspective, are you as a buyer going to have to inject significant capital in order to integrate on the back end? And then obviously negotiating the right level of protections from a reps and warranties perspective and indemnities perspective, closing conditionality, negotiating the right level for that, right? Understanding that this is the company that you're going to be integrating and that you're going to be working with this team after closing to make sure that the acquisition is successful. It's kind of a balancing act, and really trying to figure out what the right balance is for this particular transaction is key. And that's something that we work really hard with our clients to figure out.
Right. Definitely a lot of moving parts there. And Victoria, from Coinbase's perspective as a serial crypto acquirer, can you run down some of the major considerations for the firm when approaching potential targets and how those considerations are potentially evolving as risks intensify?
Major considerations really change depending on business priorities. I think that's true at Coinbase as well as any other serial crypto acquirers. So in some years or for some periods of time, the focus might really be on building out certain products, in which case the team will look for targets that have the product or the team or talent that can help build the product, including finding folks with the right skill set to guide organic growth internally. In other years, it might be international growth and rapid expansion into different geos, and that can entail things like receiving licensing and regulatory approvals in other geos that could take years or a prohibitively long time to obtain in the first instance if a firm tries to do that organically. The considerations for M&A targets just really changes depending on what the business priorities are at a given time. And in terms of how those considerations change as risks intensify, there really is a balance when we're looking at potential targets of business benefit versus resourcing that would go into the deal, also balanced with closing certainty. And certainly regulatory uncertainty is a large part of whether or not we'd be able to close the deal. And that tends to be the most unpredictable factor when we're considering an integration plan and an execution plan on a given deal. I think more and more there's heightened sensitivity to taking on regulatory obligations when we're acquiring potentially regulated entities.
Is there any scope to form collaborative discussions with regulators to perhaps withstand some of this regulatory scrutiny in the future?
Yes. I think oftentimes we're in conversations with regulators on a normal and cordial cadence to the extent that the firm is heavily regulated, and that sometimes has nothing to do with M&A per se. So a firm might have agreements in place with state or federal regulators, such as monitorships or consent orders, where you might have mandated regular touch points, which would be a good opportunity to potentially discuss business strategy, potential mergers, potential investments that are in the pipe. And there are also times that we might want to affirmatively reach out to the regulators to give them a heads up, even ahead of a formal notice or formal consent, if that's required from a relationship perspective. So really, at the end of the day, it's relationship based with our regulators, and it's important to maintain a well-informed and sort of educational element to those conversations. So just keeping them in the loop and viewing it as a partnership.
Definitely. And I guess this might be a bit of a provocative question, but from each of your unique perspectives, what would you view as a low risk versus high risk target?
I think it's hard, Sarani, to kind of categorize a specific target as low risk or high risk from my perspective. I tend to think of targets as kind of existing on a spectrum. Obviously, in just the tech space generally, intellectual property, things like that are areas of potentially heightened risk. And then when we add on to that the layer of fintech, and then on top of that the layer of crypto, it pushes the risk that we focus a lot on into some of the more regulated areas. It's just different levels of risk. And serial acquirers in the space have also gotten kind of comfortable with these different areas of heightened risk.
Mm-hmm. And Victoria, the company perspective as you look to, you know, make acquisitions?
So I agree that risk exists on a spectrum. I think from a business perspective, perhaps separate from regulatory considerations and what might happen in integration scenario, oftentimes we think about how a deal could go wrong based on our past experiences. So that actually tends to generally be on the integration side. Once we've actually closed a transaction, what causes a deal to be successful or not successful? And it's sometimes things that you wouldn't necessarily think about just from a legal terms perspective. And when I was outside counsel, didn't have a ton of perspective into, which is softer factors such as different culture, right? Operating norms, size of the operation, acquiring a small target that might not be used to public company apparatus and bureaucracy, which certainly we try to limit at a place like Coinbase, but just given the size of large crypto firms and international exchanges, there's just naturally very large teams and many decision-making points. There might also be technical aspects that make a target higher risk after the integration, such as failure to be able to integrate the tech stack or customers who may have issues with migration and things like that. So I think those are the lessons that we really take from our prior deals and try to learn from in future deals and get a better sense of that in the diligence process, apart from legal and financial diligence.
If I can add on that, Sarani, I think one thing that Victoria just said really harkens back to what she touched on earlier as well, which is Coinbase's approach with respect to M&A may not be as, you know, two parties fighting, right, as other areas of M&A may be. And I think that is lessons that they've learned on the integration side, right? Because oftentimes, if we're looking at smaller targets and you're negotiating opposite a founder who's spent their last 2.5 years building their company, taking a very aggressive approach when it comes to negotiation really makes it challenging on the integration side when you actually are hoping that this founder comes in fully motivated and ready to hit the ground running and be a part of the team. And I think those are sort of key challenges that you learn when you're dealing with founders on the other side.
So we have a few minutes left to talk about the future outlook. And if I can just ask both of you where you see the industry in the next 5 years, and if either of you see any particular trends that are likely to emerge. Victoria, let's start with you for this one.
Sure. So in the near term, at least at the end of 2023, I think we're going to continue to see consolidation, especially with distressed assets in this bear market, where companies that received funding over the last couple years and during the pandemic boom will start slowing down, explore their options in terms of the future. Capital markets at the end of 2023 are still fairly closed. So there will still be, I think, a great opportunity for opportunistic acquisitions in the near term, call it the next couple of years. I think we're seeing an uptick, at least anecdotally, with crypto investment from crypto native VC funds. And that includes, you know, Hahn Ventures, Pantera. Coinbase certainly is a strategic investor that continues to invest widely. And I think in the next 5 years, I'm very optimistic that there's going to be continued growth, especially as traditional finance institutions recognize the opportunity in crypto and want a piece of the pie. I think sort of every major banking institution and custodian at this point has some crypto arm because they recognize that crypto is here to stay. And so perhaps crypto acquirers in the next 5 years will not necessarily be crypto native or crypto forward players themselves, but they'll be opportunistic traditional finance and traditional tech acquirers who recognize a good opportunity.
Thanks, Victoria. And Lawrence, your final thoughts?
I think the quiet down in the M&A market in this space is really going to give the crypto space some breathing room and some time to continue to invest in growing products and services. So I agree with Victoria. In the near term, we'll see probably more M&A on the distressed side. But this isn't the first time we've seen a bear market in crypto, right? And so I think as the industry continues to grow, we're going to see larger and larger players. I personally believe we're going to see a lot of the regulatory uncertainty quiet down a little bit across the globe as people realize crypto is here to stay. And so I'm very bullish on the future. And I think that the next 5 to 8 years are going to be very exciting in crypto.
All right. A space to watch. Very exciting. So that's all we have time for, unfortunately. Lawrence, Victoria, many thanks to the both of you for taking the time to join the podcast and for sharing your incredible insights on this emerging and very exciting space. Thanks to everyone listening, and thanks to Baker McKenzie for sponsoring the podcast. Stay tuned for the next installment of Talking M&A.